Hello, and welcome to the Roundtable Discussion on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this roundtable discussion on the state of the comics industry, I'm joined by Eric from Cowabunga, and we're going to talk about the Diamond Comics distribution Chapter 11 bankruptcy and the fallout of all of that. How are you doing tonight, Eric?
I'm doing well, John. How are you doing?
I am doing well. Now, we are recording this on Friday evening, February 7th, and I'm saying that flat out because come Saturday morning the 8th or any time thereafter, the specifics of things we're talking about may have already changed. And this episode's probably not going to go up until, I think, the 17th. So definitely there'll be room for things to have changed. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. This is a really bizarre situation that, in my mind, has been a couple of years in coming. And we've seen some cases where on one day, all sorts of things happen, and then we go a week, and it feels like nothing's happening. And this situation with Diamond having filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, meaning they've got people coming in to help them reorganize, maybe sell off some parts, figure out how to kind of shore up their business and stuff, has really kicked off what I think is one of the great kind of prisoner dilemma situations of the comic industry. And this whole Chapter 11 thing is fundamentally different than the distributor wars of the 90s and stuff, where basically Marvel bought Heroes World, self-distributed, that didn't go well, and it really consolidated the other distributors down to where it was Capital City and Diamond. And then those two were basically in a fight to see who could get which publishers under exclusive agreements. And it got to where basically Diamond won and eventually effectively swallowed up Capital City and such. We're in almost the inverse position here where many of the publishers have already left Diamond. There's a lot of concern of, is Diamond going to come out of Chapter 11 or not? And you can easily come out of Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Marvel did it way back. Matter of fact, I think the Container Store just did it. So it's not impossible. It's not unheard of. But will that happen or not remains to be seen. So there's a lot of concern if the smaller publishers that are not over at Lunar or Penguin Random House, the other two distributors, are they going to survive or are they not? And man, I've seen a couple of articles where I guess it was an auditor had concerns about IDW, so put in the report that they may not be an ongoing concern. And there's technical stuff around that of, does it look like they'll be okay a year from now, whatever. And then everyone's like, oh, IDW's closing down, IDW's closing down. And they're like, no, we've got plenty of cash on hand. Is this going to hurt with Diamond maybe not paying for stuff or not paying for it timely or whatever? Yeah, can we survive it? We think so. So there's a lot of knee-jerk reactions to the news that's coming out. I think some of the news is being misunderstood. But the whole prisoner dilemma aspect is you're in a situation where individuals are making decisions that are in their own self-interest and therefore make sense to them, but don't lead to kind of an optimal overall outcome. And every business involved in this, every individual involved with this, I think is operating out of, you know, kind of an enlightened self-interest. They got to do what's right for them. And maybe that helps the overall industry, maybe it doesn't. It's the same sort of thing when we had the pandemic and DC decided Diamond wasn't distributing their books. They need their books distributed so they could sell them, get paid for them, etc. So it was in their best interest to basically sever ties with Diamond and go elsewhere. That is one of the defining moments that I think led to this inevitability. And in my mind, this was inevitable because after that, Marvel went to Penguin Random House. We've since had IDW go over to Penguin Random House, Image go over to Lunar, Boom's moving over to Penguin Random House. So I've watched some of the coverage on this over on YouTube, and there's a lot of, oh, Diamond couldn't handle the competition. We went from a monopoly, effectively, if not legally, literally, with Diamond being the only game in town, to they were the only game in town except for DC, and Lunar and at first UCS were the only games in town, and then just Lunar. And then we've got Penguin Random House that was then the only game in town for Marvel, but Diamond could sub-distribute at a lower rate, etc., etc. So we got into like a bizarre tri-monopoly situation. So Diamond lost a significant amount of their comic and trade business. And there's no two ways about that. So when you've spent a few decades scaling up to handle everything, and suddenly you're dealing with maybe 20% of that, and that happens in reasonably short order, that's hard to recover from. So I don't think anything we say is going to convince people that are certain that Diamond's going to collapse that it won't, or that people that are certain that Diamond will survive that it won't. And for my mind, at least, that's not our goal here.
Right.
It's just to discuss what's happening, what we know of it, what we think of it, because I really hope everybody turns out okay in this. I just don't entirely know how that is going to happen in a lot of ways.
Yep. I think that was a good setup, a good synopsis for what we're going to talk about. There's a lot of different pieces to what's going on, and some of it spans beyond the comic world. You know, Jeppy Enterprises is a pretty big conglomerate of different things, and the ripple effects that could come from this do stand a chance of maybe having some unknown consequences. So yeah, there's a lot to dig in there.
Well, and there's also a lot of unknowns, because while there's been mention of Diamond UK getting sold off, Alliance maybe, I think that probably getting sold off. I think they've already got a stalking horse bid on that one.
Yep.
I haven't heard reports on Gemstone, on the Overstreet Price Guide. There's a lot of other aspects of the overall empire that I at least haven't heard what is likely to happen on those parts.
Right. I mean, you've got companies like, so just looking at the Jeppy Enterprises kind of homepage, they have the multiple arms of Diamond, right? Diamond Comic, Diamond Books.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's Previews, Gemstone, Game Trade Magazine. They own a magazine called Baltimore Magazine, which is obviously where they're headquartered. But then the Toys and Games, you mentioned Alliance. They also have Diamond Select Toys, Gentle Giant, mm-hmm. Art Asylum. They have multiple multimedia outlets, so like PreviewsWorld.com, Game Trade Magazine TV or whatever, Sapphire Studios. But then there's a couple that I think people don't think of as regularly, and that's Hakes Auction House, Gerber, which also owns, or I guess is parented up the comic supplies line Cross that Diamond has. So they not only have the E. Gerber Mylights, fullbacks, halfbacks, but they also have the standard current bags and boards. Also, their relatively new Iron Guard supplies line, which is the collectible card games and sports card supplies, as well as a number of other platforms. So there's a lot, right? There's a lot of pieces that are affected. And just this week, we were affected by something that doesn't go under the name Diamond, but is related to Jeppy. And that is, there's a new Pokemon set that's going to be coming out in very short time. And Pokemon is, it's not red hot, it is white hot. There is nothing hotter than Pokemon right now. And Pokemon USA is one of the companies that is owed money. And because they are owed money after independent review, there's, I guess, enough reason by Pokemon USA to believe that they will not be made whole. So they obtained a court order that all of their product that sits in the Alliance warehouse needs to go back to Pokemon USA. So effectively, all customers that leverage Alliance for their Pokemon product have nothing coming for this new release, which is going to be one of the biggest releases that will have happened in probably the last 3 to 5 years. So there's so many different impacts that are going to be hit from this.
Well, and one of the initial reports, I think it was, I know ICV2 reported on some of this, but the Beat actually had it laid out on a table. It was kind of handy. Of the top 30 unsecured creditors for Diamond. And I think on that list, the Pokemon company was at around $280,000.
Yeah, they're like, I don't know, 15th, 18th on the list.
Somewhere down there, yeah. Lunar was at close to $500,000. Penguin Random House was at $9.2 million.
Yep.
And it's like, that's a lot of money to a lot of different places.
Yep, Wizards of the Coast is $1 million.
Well, the fact that the other two distributors of Penguin Random House and Lunar are both on there means if things were to go horribly, horribly, horribly wrong, and they didn't get paid, that impacts the other two distributors. Then you start seeing the impact it has on publishers, on other supply side of the equation sort of things. And what we saw in the distributor wars of the 90s is we went from the industry being in a boom in the early 90s and stuff with the heyday of Image, Valiant. I mean, at one point, the town I was in had like 24 comic stores, to afterwards, there were maybe 4 stores left. And it was just a brutal time. And I don't know if that's going to happen here, but we're tossing a pretty big rock in the middle of the industry with unknown ramifications.
Yeah, now, I do think you're going to see a lot of that, and we can get into it in a bit. Mm-hmm. But I do think you're going to see the market constrict a little. One thing, though, maybe before we get too carried away, is we talked about the Chapter 11 bankruptcy. There might be just a little bit of reason to distinguish between Chapter 11 and Chapter 7.
Okay.
I think what most people are familiar with, what tends to hit the big news channels are Chapter 7 bankruptcy filings. And that's essentially when a company is at the end of its rope and they are filing Chapter 7 to liquidate what they have. And the goal of that is to sell off their assets to pay the people that they owe their money to, and they're going to disappear. Now, companies can be bought that are in Chapter 7. That happens, but that's one type. The bankruptcy that Diamond filed for was Chapter 11, which is, like you said, allows the organization to restructure if they can secure a line of credit. And Diamond, or I guess Jeffy, they were able to secure a line of credit for, off the top of my head, I think it was $41.5 million from JPMorgan Chase Bank to keep the lights on, keep their employees moving while they attempt to restructure. So that was the first real news that we had was, you know, just FYI, we filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. We're going to start restructuring. Everything continues as normal. That was what we got.
Yeah, what I had seen is they'd gotten the $41 million from JPMorgan Chase, and that $32.6 million of that is debt Diamond owed at the time of filing, and an additional $8.4 million that they could be using to kind of finance their operations as they prepare for selling off parts of it.
Yep.
And that was some of the stuff that I think ICV2 had reported. Now, the other thing that they had in there that I kind of found interesting was I think they flat out stated that Steve Geppi had a personal guarantee on the debtor in possession financing. I don't know exactly what that means. I am not a bankruptcy expert by any stretch of the imagination, but it sounds like he's trying to make good on everything, at the very least, is how I read that.
I think, for better, for worse, for good, bad, I think that Steve Geppi has tried in many ways to do what's best for the industry. At the same time, he's made sure to do what's best for him too. Any good capitalist is going to do that, right? So there's, it's not like we can say that all he's done has been altruistic, but there have been so many things that his company has done to help the industry. Things like extending credit to companies, most recently during COVID, right, that couldn't necessarily generate the income to pay off their invoices. There was credit extended by Diamond with very, very generous terms. There's been many times where Diamond itself has opted to work to help either new stores by extending credit, adding additional discount tiers. So there's been a lot that they have done. However, for three decades, they've effectively been a non-monopoly. And And what that breeds, I think what we see in many cases, is stagnation. There's good things that Diamond has, like a collective database that has quite a bit of rich information about not just the products, but also the state of the industry, or at least until things started fracturing. That's huge. They developed the point of sale system that many comic stores use. Same thing with their pull list system. So there's a number of pieces that without Diamond investing in doing that, we wouldn't have. However, it's very archaic. It's old. People have asked, since James and I took over our store, people have been complaining about many of the archaic practices and needing to optimize and upgrade and update, even things as basic as the boxes that they ship comics in. And that very rarely or minimally happened. And so what you're seeing now is, yes, there's essentially three companies with exclusive locks on things. You're starting to see some differences in operations and a little bit of competitive nature, and hopefully that continues. But yeah, so that's part of the Diamond problem as well.
Well, yeah, I totally agree that competition forces people to be more on the ball than not having competition. But a lot of the coverage I've been seeing, there's a mantra of Diamond has never innovated. They got lazy being a monopoly and things to that effect. Yet, again, you just went off on a couple of things that they'd done with the point of sales system and things of that sort over the years that were innovative. They also had, at one point, they opened a new state-of-the-art distribution hub and whatnot. So it's not like they were not innovating at all. Now, were they innovating enough? Would they have done more if they'd had competition? Yeah, probably. I don't think there's any argument there.
Right.
But I think a lot of what them being a de facto monopoly bred was contempt.
Yep.
I mean, Diamond is not perfect by any stretch of the imagination.
And neither is PRH or Lunar.
Yeah, exactly. None of them are. And the funny thing is, while they are kind of sort of competing in can they get the books out in better condition, etc., they're not competing very much on product, since each one, as again, has a lock on certain products. And if out of COVID we had come out with two or three distributors that were effectively on even footing in terms of the product line they could offer, granted Diamond would have had a 30-year head start or whatever, that would have been good for Diamond to have had that competition. But it came at the cost of losing first around, I don't know, 35-40% of their comic business with DC going away, and then another 40-55% when Marvel went away. Again, add to that now Image, IDW, soon to be Boom, and you're down to where, again, they're trying to survive on, I mean, their comic business has literally been decimated since the start of the pandemic.
Yep, 100%.
I don't know how anyone can survive that. So the fact it took this long to go for bankruptcy, and people are saying, oh, the canary in the coal mine was all the problems they had over the holidays.
Well, that was definitely a compounding factor. And of course, there's probably behind the scenes factors that we don't know about as to why they were unable or unwilling to secure the continued lease of that warehouse facility. Was that the canary could be? I think you can trace a lot of this back to really where the fracturing started, which was COVID, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of opportunity there, and Diamond chose to shut down. And I think that created the out clause for DC, which then also rippled down. And I think it was at that point where the things went off the rails for Diamond in an uncontrollable way where they could not regain sustainability. You know, being a comic distributor is not a high margin affair, and being a wholesaler is even less, because even though Diamond was probably the largest client of Marvel, there were many, many, many stores, and we can get into this at some point, that did not make switches to PRH. They did not switch their Image business to PRH. They preferred to keep everything at Diamond because it was one-stop shopping minus DC, mm-hmm. right? So what ends up happening now is you're originally, maybe say you're making an 8% margin when you're the distributor, and now you are making a 2 or 3% margin as the wholesaler. You still have to do a lot of work because you're still marketing books. You're still having to go through the inventory, pull them, get them going to the stores they have to go to, but you're doing it on half the margin. And I think that is where some of the biggest cost losses and increased costs have arisen for them.
Absolutely. And I think there's other kind of economies of scale to factor in on the whole distribution side of there's a certain cost for the distributor to do business with a publisher, whether that publisher publishes one title or 1,000 titles. There's the calling them up, dealing with it, that kind of a thing. And then there's additional cost for each item they distribute for that publisher.
Yep.
But what that means is it's, to a certain degree, a little more cost-effective to deal with the bigger publishers than the small one-off publishers that have a handful of titles or a title or two. So Terry Moore, there's a definite fan base for him, but Terry Moore Productions is at best going to release a comic and maybe a trade a month tops, other than whatever's in the backlist and stuff like that.
Right.
So you're not going to make a ton of money on that. And I think that's where a lot of the concern is right now, is almost regardless of what happens to Diamond, and that's a big thing to set aside, but what happens to all of the smaller publishers, particularly if something bad happens to Diamond, and they're not in over it at Penguin Random House or Lunar, how do they survive?
Yeah, so there's a lot that we can unpack there.
Yeah, I saw one or two articles where one or two publishers had basically bemoaned, I don't know what I'm going to do. And the headline of the article is, publisher may throw in towel, sort of a deal, like they're going under. I'm like, wow, it's not exactly, I mean, it's kind of what they said, but it's not what they meant, at the very least, from what I took.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of legal constraints that are out there as well. If we want to talk in generalities, let's start there. So we talked about the bigger publishers at Diamond, minus maybe one or two that we'll get into, I think, specifically later.
Mm-hmm.
But they've all, either they are distributed by another distributor, or they have plans to imminently move, right? So we've got Boom is going to be shifting over as of April 1st. Their items will be at PRH. They were originally, I believe, going to be making that change in June, but because of the Chapter 11 filing and some of the additional information that has come out since, April 1st was the date that they determined they needed to make the move. There are a number of smaller publishers that are at Diamond, and what we know is just looking at the publisher list at PRH, they're not interested in dealing with publishers that have one or two titles or even five titles. When you look at their comic publishing, it's Marvel, IDW, Dark Horse. The only one that's kind of small from a comic standpoint is Archie Comics, but there is a tremendous backlog of Archie material in collected edition format that, believe it or not, still sells very well at grocery stores. So that's the one that doesn't have a lot of comics, but still has a significant amount of value to them because of the other items that they can sell. So when we look at that, all right, we've got the bigger premier publishers, minus DC and Image, which are at Lunar.
I always kind of grouped it in the Major League, Minor League, and Farm Team stuff. In the Major League, DC and Marvel.
Yeah.
And we know Marvel as at PHR, DC's at Lunar. Then there's the Minor League that, for the most part, was Boom, Dark Horse, Dynamite, IDW, and Image.
Yep.
Dark Horse and Dynamite are the two that I don't know where they're going to land at this point, because I don't think either of them are offered by either Penguin Random House or Lunar.
Dark Horse is at PRH.
Oh, okay.
Yep. They've been there actually for quite a while.
I just lost track.
No, it's very easy to do. Let's put a pin and come back to Dynamite later.
Okay.
So at Lunar, you've got a number of, I guess, middle tier, right? AAA teams. If we're going with we'll use baseball, major, minor, you know, we've got AAA teams that are rolling at Lunar. So groups like Oni Press,
mm-hmm.
just off the top of my head, trying to think of others. I could pull up the site that's in front of me.
Other ones of that size. Again, you mentioned Archie. Titan is another one.
Titan is at that one. Let's lump that in with Dynamite and talk about that later.
Okay.
But at Lunar, so we've got obviously DC and Image. They have Ahoy, Asylum, AWA, Black Mask, Clover Press, Drawn and Quarterly. Again, Drawn and Quarterly doesn't put out a ton of new material, but they have a large backlog. Fantagraphics, same thing. Floating World, IPI Comics, Kong Comics, Loma Vista, Mad Cave, which has been growing significantly over the last year. Magma, Oni, we said, Paper Cuts, Scout, Silver Sprocket, just looking at kind of the more mainstream ones. Tomorrow's Publishing, Udon, Uncivilized Vault, and Z2. So what we have there is kind of a middle tier of publishers that are putting out a little bit more than one title a month, but there are some that are smaller, and those small ones were the early converts over to Lunar once the big chips started falling. What we have kind of heard through the grapevine is that Lunar at this point, they've grown exponentially in just a couple of years.
Yeah.
I know that they have grown both in staff, but also they've had to acquire new space. I have it on very good authority that they're doing the right things to keep up, but they can't sustain bringing in a lot of these small onesie twosie companies because the amount of effort that goes into it with what they're trying to do right now, it just isn't something that is, it's not business savvy. So a lot of those smaller groups are left in the lurch right now.
Yeah.
And we've been hearing from them.
Let's give Lunar a lot of credit because they initially spun up in really short order at the start of the pandemic.
They did.
And that had to have been hard just in general, even harder during the pandemic and stuff. There have definitely been some growing pains as any company would have over the years. But by and large, it's been surprisingly smooth, all things considered and such. So yeah, I can see where they're, having known the Merkles, they are smart people. I think if they're going to add publishers, they've got, what, 20, 25 years worth of sales history through DCBS to be looking at to figure out how are some of these things actually selling? And if they're smart, they're focusing on the ones that do better than the ones that don't. But they can only absorb so much so fast.
And I think that's the bigger thing is it can only take on so many because each publisher has its own set of overhead.
Yeah.
It's not one of those things where it's directly equivalent to the number of titles. It's actually the overhead of setting up the account, setting up all of the agreements, the paperwork, the invoicing. And the more titles you have and the more units you're shipping, the smaller that overhead cost per becomes. So I think that's a big part of it. And I will agree, hats off to Lunar for being able to do what they've done. You know, there was some, I think industry-wide, there's a lot of feelings of shady business as to how they came to be and how things worked out. And that's fine. We can all have our own personal opinions on it. But as an entity, Lunar has done the best that they can, and they've been quite successful at what they're doing. So that's good. But that still leaves a lot of these little publishers out in no man's land, so to speak. And not just your Albatross, you know, your Eric Powell's and those kind of companies, but what's going to happen with Alien, right? So Alien came out with a press release. Alien is the company that has acquired actually a handful of different licenses, but probably the most notable of them being the Valiant license.
Yeah.
And to Alien's credit, Valiant has been picking up steam lately. And what we heard from Alien was they're working on standing up a direct-to-consumer and direct-to-retailer website for us to order from. Now, off the surface, most people would say, well, that sounds great, right? They're thinking about the fact that they have to support retailers just as much as they have to support end customers, and they're putting a mechanism in place to try and make it easier for retailers. Yes. However, the problem becomes, I used to have one distributor. I now have three distributors.
Yep.
And now I'm going to have to go to Alien and order books if I'm going to do it that way. And if even 10% of the back half of previews do that, I'm going to be at 25 sites placing orders. I'm not doing that. It is not worth the energy for these small publishers.
It doesn't scale.
Does not scale at all. Not to mention, some of these publishers, you know, we're ordering one copy of a book. Now, if I order one copy of a book from 35 publishers in the back of previews in a given month, and it gets added in with my Boom orders, my Dynamite orders, my Titan orders, okay, the shipping ends up working out pretty well that it's a drop in the bucket. But if I'm going to order two books from a publisher a month, they're not going to ship it to me for free. So I'm going to have to be paying that. And that's probably going to completely erase whatever margin I have on these books. And margins on comic books doesn't equate to a lot of money. So when you get right to it, that's going to become a significant problem. And what ends up happening in the industry is going to be very interesting. If a number of these groups band together to try to do something and offer one platform,
yeah,
there may be an opportunity there. But I think what we're going to see, and this is what I was alluding to earlier, stores that depend on a lot of that type of product are going to be the ones that are really affected the heaviest, because they're going to be spreading themselves thinner. They're going to have less opportunity for revenue. And then there's other companies who we have heard that are saying, well, we're going to start adding retailer tiers to our Kickstarter campaigns. I personally have bought in a couple of Kickstarter campaigns. I've been very, very selective on what I have done for myself personally. And I have made sure that the Kickstarters that I back are ones that have a proven track record of coming out relatively close to when they say they're going to. But there are so many of these smaller publishers that will offer a Kickstarter. Could be year and a half before you see the book.
Yeah.
Well, now I've got to deal with a customer who's been asking, where's this product? It's been a year and a half. You've got my money, or, you know, whatever. By the time it comes out, nah, I don't really care. It's a year and a half old. That's an inordinate amount of risk to put on stores. And I'm sure that there are plenty of stores that are going to be out there chasing that. But I think a lot of us are not really inclined to want to go for that risk. So it's going to be two things. One, you have smaller publishers that are trying to optimize and find ways to do things for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But as they're going down that road, and what is probably the smartest decision for them as far as cost out, revenue in, may actually cut the direct market out unintentionally.
And that's the prisoner's dilemma stuff I was talking about. Back when Future Comics was doing a handful of titles and going direct to retailers, it worked for them. But they were the only game in town doing that. Whereas everything else is going through Diamond. And like you said, if half the publishers, or even a handful of the ones that you do a lot of business with or whatever, start trying to go straight to you versus a middleman distributor, you get killed on the shipping, you get killed on the invoicing, the unpacking, the all the minutiae of handling the material. It makes sense from the publisher of, hey, I've got to keep my books alive, I got to get them out there, I'll just cut out the middleman, go straight to the retailer. But again, it doesn't scale.
Yep. And we've had experience with a company that does something sort of like this, actually, too. So Scout tried to do a web store to retailers,
mm-hmm.
and we participated in it for certain either exclusive things or when we would need additional stock. And, well, Scout doesn't do it anymore. Clearly, it didn't work. And then the other one that we had was through Bad Idea, and that was in the title. it was a terrible idea, and that's why we didn't follow through after the second launch. And it wasn't so much the shipping and the costs. They were nowhere ready to handle any sort of invoicing. I mean, it was the paperwork nightmare that was ridiculous. And that's the fear I think retailers who have been bitten by this are looking at. And why would I want to potentially go down this road for dozens of other publishers? But there is a little bit of back channel industry talk that there could be a third option coming back onto the scenes. So back when we had COVID and Lunar was spun up, there was another distributor that was spun up at that time, and that was UCS. Now, Lunar is, of course, the distribution arm partnered with DCBS and InStock Trades. When UCS came out, they would be the distribution partner to Midtown Comics. Now, Midtown Comics made the decision to pull the plug on UCS with DC Comics, and there weren't a lot of specifics given, and I don't really care at the end of the day. All I know is that the DC Comics gig for them wasn't going to pan out the way they wanted, so they put a hiatus on it. However, they never closed the business. UCS is still an existing company. They still have things that you can purchase, and we've purchased things from UCS in the last 3-4 years after their DC Comics closure, ending of the agreement, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
So they are still out there and still an entity. And there was a little bit of discussion, I think it was last week or the week before, that UCS Midtown may be mulling the idea of looking at providing distribution services for some of those smaller back half publishers. Now, when you're not dealing with having to work on things like Marvel and IDW, or if you're at Lunar working on DC and Image, that does free up more capacity to be able to take on smaller things. And if you're getting one or two titles a week from a handful of publishers, it might be doable for a smaller organization like that. So we'll see. Nothing's been set yet. Nothing's been decided. And clearly there hasn't been a lot of communication on it, but there were some rumblings. I would certainly welcome that over many other ideas that I've heard, just because getting as few places where I have to go to order product from is more beneficial for everybody. But it's up to UCS if they think they can handle that, if they want to take it on.
Well, and wasn't there another distributor 10, 15, 20 years ago that coexisted with Diamond, mainly did back orders for smaller press publishers? And they survived for a while, but it was never, I mean, just by the nature of it, going to be huge business. So I'm sure that, I know that closed a while back. There's the possibility, I would imagine, of something like that restarting, provided you could get over that hurdle of convincing the person behind it, it'd be worth doing.
Yeah, and I think that that's the challenge.
Yeah. Well, and talking about the publishers trying to find different models, TKO Studios, they came out, almost 10 years ago now, trying to go straight to consumer, straight to comic shops, got 2, maybe 3 rounds of books out, and kind of fizzled?
Yeah, I think there was a lot of challenges with that. So obviously, they had significant creative talent. That was not their problem. I think some of their issues stemmed from they had a perception of devalued product when someone can walk into a comic store and see an item and then walk into Walmart and see it. That's not to say that Walmart is a bad store. I shop at Walmart. But, you know, there's a perception, right? There's a perception of I walk into a specialty shop, but I can see the same thing when I go to Walmart. And if we talk about other products that you can see in both places, like Funko Pops, what you see at Walmart, Target, Walgreens, Hot Topic are exclusives, right? There's chase figures, there's exclusivity to certain things. So there's a differentiator. And there was no Walmart exclusive covers to TKO books. So I think that was part of it. The other part of it was they had that odd trim size.
Yeah.
That didn't fit bags and boards and didn't fit with anything else on a bookshelf. And believe it or not, comic readers and collectors are idiosyncratic enough that that is a non-starter for some of them.
That's one of the reasons I don't get distillery books.
The magazine size format?
Yeah, I don't get enough magazine size stuff to have a convenient storage methodology for it.
Yep.
You know, it doesn't fit my system. Now, the bringing up Walmart brings up the issue of, again, it was around the time of the pandemic that DC tried doing the 100-page giants, getting comics in Walmart and stuff like that.
Yep.
That lasted for a year or two and then seems to have fizzled.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody's talking about, hey, let's try to get the books out into the mass market and stuff, which is good because I think it's a non-starter. I think it's been tried. I don't think it works. And even if somebody were to successfully swing a deal to do it, we're at the point now where a lot of these books are $4.99, $5.99 for 20-ish pages of story. I don't see how the mass market would accept that.
Yeah. No, quite frankly, they don't. That's the biggest thing. And a lot of that has to do with the cost of racking and the cost of spaces. So every item in any of those retail outlets, there's a cost associated with where that product is placed.
Mm-hmm.
And the more frontage you get, the more you're centered in front of the store at checkouts, the higher premium you pay. When you look at, I don't know what a copy of Time costs now, I'm going to guess $7.99. But when you look at the amount of content that you get in a $7.99 Time magazine versus a $4.99 Marvel or DC book, like you said, it's 20 pages, and some of them are meaty, many of them are not. And so it's hard for, I think, consumers to be drawn to that product. And so the companies that will be distributing into a Walmart or a grocery store, whatever it is, they're going to go with something that they can guarantee repeated sales, right? Every month I have the new issue of Time. I know people are going to buy that. It may not be the same for other products. So I think that there's a lot of headwinds there. It's a very interesting market. I do think that the mass market side of things, for people who are mass market consumers in the traditional sense where they're going to a larger box retailer, I think we see a lot of those people opting more for a digital path than a physical path.
I was about to ask what you thought the impact on digital comics was going to be,
I think it has its place. It does not cancel out collectability. It does not cancel out cover options, things like that. So I think that digital has its place, but I also think that people who largely read digital either would not be reading comics anymore if they had converted to digital, or would likely not be reading comics at all if digital didn't exist. So I think that it has its place in the market. The other place where we see mass market success are stores like Barnes & Noble, Amazon, right? Places where you're most likely getting collected editions. But that, again, is for the people who are less prone to going to a specialty store and just want to go somewhere where they can pick up the latest saga, the latest Something That's Killing the Children, whatever trade is coming out, or classic The Killing Joke.
Yeah.
Avengers, when the movies are coming out, right? That's where they're going to go, because there's a lot of families. Like my family, we didn't have a comic book store nearby. My parents had no idea to take that comic stores existed. So if I wanted like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles anything, which I did, it either came from the grocery store, came from Shopko, like it came from wherever we could get it. At that time, we had a Borders bookstore. So everything has its place. And I think what we're just trying to settle on is, how is the industry going to react to this? I don't think that it's going to affect digital. I don't think it's going to affect mass market. I think the biggest effect is going to be small publishers and where they go. That's, I think, going to be the biggest piece.
I do think there is going to be a potential impact on digital, but it'll be a kind of a tertiary impact. If things go poorly, and hopefully they don't, there's a likelihood that some stores are going to close. Matter of fact, I think we've already heard of a few already that it's like, hey, I'm at retirement age, I'm just shutting down versus moving on this.
Yep.
And I can totally understand people being in that mindset given all the chaos. So if a store shuts down, presumably the people shopping there are shopping at it because it's either the closest or the best store for them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are they going to be interested enough in the comics they're getting to go seek out that next closest, next best store or not? Or is this something where maybe there isn't another store within arm's reach, or not one they want to go to, and do they cut over to digital? Because I think the way you were talking about digital is kind of in agreement with my mindset of it's a really good retention thing for comic readers, of we would have otherwise lost them to the hobby, but this kept them around.
Yeah.
And I can see it being useful in that respect.
Yeah. I think that what we're going to see with stores, I think there's going to be some consolidation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the consolidation we're going to see are those people who are at that retirement age and are saying, you know what, I'm done. And I think there's going to be one of two scenarios are going to be the dominating ways that things go. If the store exists in an area that otherwise would not be able to support a store, but because Greg Comic Guy has been here for 40 years, people know, well, Greg's been there 40 years. He has all sorts of stuff. We should go there and check out and see if he's got it. He's become a destination.
Yeah.
He's not necessarily existing solely because comics come out on Wednesday. In fact, he's existing because of everything else. Oh, and if we go there, we can get the new comic. Those are stores where you could argue, well, if it's a destination that otherwise wouldn't support it, people that want that destination will seek out their destination.
And also, stores of that age have the added advantage if somebody's like, hey, you know, I'm thinking about going and picking up a comic based on the latest Marvel movie. Where should I go? It's been around long enough that even if somebody hasn't been to a comic store in 20 years, they may remember it and say, oh, you should check this place out.
Right.
So there's a long-term marketing aspect to be considered.
That's option one, or dominating factor, or dominating path one. I think the other one that we're going to see, and this is what's really, I think, interesting and exciting about the industry, is what we saw coming out of the pandemic were things that made a lot of us that have been in the industry for a little while groan, roll our eyes, look at it and go, ugh, this isn't sustainable. Things like Whatnot, selling on Facebook, eBay Live, all of these kinds of things where, just like the rest of us in the comic book industry, there's always some of those stereotypes. And you're just like, ugh, don't lump me in with those people. The one thing that I have seen more than anything else in the last 3 years is an infusion of younger people who have fresh ideas, want to focus on the hobby, and are driven to want to succeed, but they are using the internet, they are using new things, Instagram, Twitter, any of those tools to say, well, my store wouldn't exist if it only existed on foot traffic alone.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to identify those other markets. And I think that's good.
Yeah.
Because what happens for many of us who are blessed with jobs that afford travel, I can't count the number of times I've traveled for work and said, well, I'm going to go see if there's a comic store nearby.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, if I have options, I'm going to look at it and I'm going to say, oh, I saw these guys on YouTube, or I heard a podcast, or I had some exposure to them somewhere, and I'm going to go out of my way to find them. Now, I'm not going to be a repeat customer, but if they get three or four people a week, if they're in a bigger city, that's a way to make yourself sustainable. So I think that while we're going to see a number of stores close, I think we're going to see more stores opening. I think it'll be less stores opening than what close. But the tools that so many people are using now as they start their businesses afford them flexibility and opportunity. So our store, we have gone much deeper into back issues. We still sell tons of new comics, but we've dominated our store with back issues now. The last time you were here, I think we've doubled our back issues since then. And I think it was since you were there the time before, we doubled it from that.
Yeah, I was going to say, you had a lot the last time I was there. So yeah.
You can see it again. But we also have the Diamond point of sale system. We have the legacy pull list. And those are things that have been in place in our business for 20 years. And replacing that, that's a lot, because there's a lot of data and there's a lot of training, learning, you know, new patterns we have to figure out. And let's face it, when you've been doing something one way for 20 years and it works and you've got it down to an optimized system, you're not very inclined to change. Now, there are other tools out there. There's Comic Hub. There's, I think, three or four other newer tools that allow you to do things like pre-sale listing. They allow you to do some pull box functionality. They allow you to potentially market on certain website platforms if you have a sale system set up. So there's other options out there, and newer stores are starting to leverage those things. And I think that's great. I think that that's what the hobby needs. And that's what we didn't necessarily have with Diamond when we only had really one way of doing things. So there are some positives to be had here.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I'll say.
Well, I think the industry was in the need of a shakeup. I just didn't think they needed it this way or necessarily at this time.
Concussions weren't required.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, a shakeup, not a TKO or whatever.
Yeah.
I think the other consolidation that we're going to see, and it's going to be felt really on, I think, this order form, is I think a lot of stores are going to make what for them is, I think, the wise decision of, I'm going to order what I know I can sell.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got an indie book and you would have ordered five copies because you knew you could sell three, might have that fourth, and, well, you give it a shot for that fifth to have something on the rack, they may pull back to the three.
Yeah.
So we may see some of these smaller publishers seeing their orders drop noticeably just because stores are cutting that copy or two they would have had on the shelf.
Yeah. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of that has actually already started, and not because of the bankruptcy, but because of this going on weeks, I think for one store that I see was very outspoken, this was the 16th week in a row that they have not received any Diamond product on time for on sale date. And when that happens, stores are going to start cutting back to subs only, because it happens all the time. We get people that'll come out to us and be like, oh, this store in Milwaukee didn't get Marvel today. Do you have it? Yeah, of course. All right, I'm just going to buy my stuff here. And when it happens 16 weeks in a row, that's a problem.
I was one of those customers at one point, yeah. I had one point where I had a pull list at one store. I was traveling a bit. Got there. I'd been gone for, I think, it might have even been the 5 weeks of Zero Hour. And they had issues like 0, 2, and 4, but not the odd number ones or something like that. And I'm like, I have a pull box. I had an itemized list of exactly what I was expecting. I'd been shopping there for a long time, yada, yada. Went to another store. If I can walk out of here today with the books, the store I had pulling my stuff couldn't get me, I'll move my business. And I exceeded both the issue count and dollar value I'd kind of set as my mental threshold to be enough of, okay, they can do it. So yeah, there are a lot of customers, if for whatever reason, and it may have been no fault of the store whatsoever, if the store can't provide the books, they'll go somewhere they can.
Yep.
So it's a bit of a cutthroat market that way, but the way the market is set up, from the customer perspective, you kind of got no choice, because if you wait too long, it's now a back issue, and you're lucky if you're going to find it there either.
Right.
And from the stores, they're, again, as you well know, kind of caught in the middle sometimes.
We are very much caught in the middle.
I definitely think the woes Diamond has been having of late getting product out, to the point of when they shut the one warehouse down, and that's where their previews catalogs were going, catching themselves flat-footed was a little embarrassing and unfortunate. And then you add to that, anytime any store has ever gotten anything that was poorly packed, came damaged, whatever, of which Diamond had 30-40-year period where they were the only game in town, so if it happened, it happened through Diamond. That resentment built up, and again, I think that's all coming to roost right now.
Oh yeah, I mean, they are still clearly a very, very, very far distant third as far as the packaging and quality of product that's received. But don't forget, Steve Jeppy will tell you, Diamond does not sell collectibles. They sell consumables. You choose to collect it, that's on you.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I've seen back when the pandemic was happening and the new distributors were coming up and there were damages through the other distributors too, I watched one or two YouTube videos. The guy was opening a box, looking at it, oh my God, this thing is completely destroyed. And I'm like, okay, I got a big TV. I'm putting it to the 4K mode on the YouTube thing. And I'm like, where is the damage?
The one thing I will say is that the damages that we saw early on in the distribution game, so PRH, they had a lot of struggles. And I'm going to say it's not all on PRH. A lot of it is the tissue paper cover stock that Marvel uses.
Yeah. Comics are not as durable as they used to be.
Yeah. So that's one instance where I got to say it's a 50-50. But the one thing that we did observe is Lunar and PRH, when there were widespread damages and people shared it on Facebook, talked about it on YouTube, they made changes, and they made changes relatively quick.
Yep.
Diamond, I remember going to Diamond lunches and Diamond dinners and hearing the same two retailers bring in boxes with examples of product and how it was packed and how it was shipped for 6, 7, 8, 9 years straight.
Yeah.
Nothing changed. No one seemed to care. So, yeah, it's different. And before I forget, I know we were talking about smaller publishers and other publishers, and I'd said, let's put Dynamite and Titan to the side. Do we want to talk about those and talk about where they're at?
Yeah, because, I mean, right now, I think they are the bigger publishers over at Diamond.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're kind of the anchor publishers now, which, to my way of thinking, is staggering. No disrespect to those publishers. I've gotten a lot of books from both of them. I've enjoyed them. I think they're good publishers. But based on the amount of sales they do, the size of them, etc., compared to, again, Marvel, DC, they were definitely minor league, AAA, kind of somewhere in that range.
Yep. So what's always been interesting to me is that Oni and Titan are now owned by the same company, and Oni has been Lunar and Diamond for quite a while. Titan is still only Diamond exclusive. Dynamite is also only Diamond exclusive, and I think you had alluded to it. We have not heard from either one of them on where they're going or what they're doing, and that's, I don't know, a little disconcerting. It'd be nice if someone would come out and say, like, hey, we're aware. Like, we're reading the news. We know there could be some headwinds, and we'll have more information later. But we don't really know what's going to happen. And I will qualify that by saying we also don't know if the contracts that they have signed for exclusivity preclude them from engaging in distribution talks with other distributors. No clue. Don't know what those contracts look like. They may be bound to certain things that they can't talk about. I would assume that these businesses have at least read the headlines and thought, we might have to prepare for plan B. What's that going to be? But yeah, we don't know yet. We don't know at all what's going to happen. I think both companies right now are building momentum. So Titan with the Conan license has been building significant momentum.
Oh yeah.
And not to be outdone is Dynamite with, they've got a number of Disney licenses, the Terminator books selling really, really well. Obviously, Vampirella and Red Sonja have their customer base. But the one thing that Dynamite has done in the last year and a half or so that is just pleasing to every retailer is their cover stock is thick and durable and hardly any damages. So not only are they starting to add more sales, more customers because of the content that they're publishing, retailers are also willing to add a couple more of those Jenny Frison covers or Tony Fleeks and Trish Fortzner covers or Perillo or Linsner. We're going to add one or two extra covers to the shelf because, number one, we know we're not going to have to deal with a whole bunch of damages. And number two, they're going to stand up straight on the shelf. They're going to look good. They're going to present well. They're going to be durable to last for 2-3 months if people look at them and then someone comes in and says, oh, I want to get these last three issues. So there's momentum building for both companies. If I was a guessing person, I would say for sure Titan would probably end up at Lunar if Diamond were to cease to exist. And we can talk about what the timeline of events there are. But the reason I say that is because Oni is there and they're owned essentially by the same group. It would make sense to try and keep all of your eggs in one basket.
Yeah.
Dynamite, wild card, no clue.
Well, and they've been doing well with the Space Ghost, the Johnny Quest stuff.
Yep.
Thundercats.
Yeah, Thundercats has been great.
They're going to go somewhere, and it would be foolish of either Penguin Random House or Lunar to not talk to them and try to get them if and when the opportunity arose, if it hasn't already.
Right.
And it may be that there's back channel conversations going on, but legally they can't really move forward or say anything right now.
Yep.
Because of contracts or what have you.
Yep.
And there's also an aspect of if Dynamite and Titan were to say, hey, we're leaving, that's another nail in Diamond's coffin of what do they got left?
Right, right.
And they've got a presumably a good deal over at Diamond that if they can hang on to it, they probably should, provided Diamond sticks around. Which, again, there's no reason to think it wouldn't. I mean, there's plenty of reason to think it won't, but there's also a lot of reasons to think it can.
Until you get to the news story that broke a couple weeks ago, about a week ago, actually. And that news story essentially listed out that even though the restructuring is happening, there's just not a financial way right now. And unless there's a bid to buy Diamond Comics by the end of March, Diamond will essentially cease operations April 1st. That's the reporting out from Diamond that we've had. So we do have a timeline.
Oh, yeah.
We can clearly say that end of March, we're going to know either things are going to continue, they've either got a bid for purchase or a competitor is going to buy them out and they'll continue to operate into a transition mode or the doors are closing.
I had heard a date of March 25th. I'd heard another time of April 1st for when that sale had to be kind of locked in and it had to be completed on or before, I think, the middle of April, like the 16th or something.
I think April 1st is the date we should circle. And the reason I say that is because that's the date that Boom circled as when PRH will start distributing their comics.
And that makes sense.
I don't think there's a coincidence there. I think that was them saying, okay, well, we know either way, something has to be decided by April 1st. That's, we feel that the last Wednesday in March is the last day we can confidently get our books out through Diamond.
Well, and Diamond had to put in some paperwork. It said the Hunt Valley headquarters. I'm not sure the headquarters of what, though. But if they failed to find a buyer by the 1st, that there would be layoffs, they'd cease operations, close the main office, that kind of a thing.
I think Hunt Valley is where the JEPI headquarters is located.
That makes sense. So yeah, April 1st seems to be that make or break date, and that's not that far away.
No, no, and significantly sooner than we thought, because when the initial Chapter 11 news broke, everything that we were being told was Free Comic Book Days ago. That's a Diamond-driven, or has been a Diamond-driven marketing campaign. Oh, yep, we're going to be good. We have everything we need in place to make it through Free Comic Book Day. Well, we saw this past week, I think 6 Free Comic Day books were canceled. Some books were moved over to Lunar for companies that are starting to make their way over. So it's clearly that's not a date that's reasonable. And I think April 1st is the date we all should circle on our calendar.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Free Comic Book Day will still happen this year.
Absolutely, because we have all the publishers through PRH and Lunar have all of their Free Comic Book Day books. Those have not been canceled. That will be continuing to go on. And I think it's become enough of a tradition in the industry, and enough stores do many other things in collaboration with Free Comic Book Day, that the event itself isn't really dependent on Diamond anymore. It's dependent on just the unification of saying, well, okay, we know that Free Comic Book Day is the first Saturday in May. That's it.
Well, and I think it may be very important this year to have Free Comic Book Day, because I think it has the potential of bringing a lot of people into stores that just come in like the once a year.
Absolutely. We see plenty of people that come in once a year. We see some people who come in once a year, grab three free comics and jet.
But it's a start. They at least came in.
Right. And every year there's customers that we see for the first time that we see 51 more times over the course of the next calendar year.
Yeah. You can't sell somebody something if they don't come in your door.
Exactly. Exactly. And if Free Comic Book Day is the impetus to get them to come in, and they walk out with a box of Magic cards or some Pokemon packs or Warhammer or manga or back issue or video game or statue, it doesn't matter. They found something that interests them. And once they find something that interests them, the likelihood that they'll come back is pretty high.
That was one of the big gains, I thought, when Buffy the Vampire Slayer first had a comic book, is it was bringing that entire Buffy crowd, or at least a percentage of them, obviously not all of them, into comic stores. They came, they bought Buffy, and they'd probably look around and say, oh, that looks interesting, let me get that. So anything that gets a contingent of people that are geek in some way, but not comic book geek, into a comic book store, that's a win, and we need more of those things.
Yeah, I think the two most recent iterations of that were The Walking Dead and Saga. And yes, they both originated in single-issue comic form, but they were transcendent of pop culture, right? There were people that started watching a TV show, and then they realized, well, the comic was still coming out. Well, they wanted to come in and get on it, and then they realized that the comic had been out long before the show. They could come to the store and learn the story beforehand, and then, of course, the story deviated. But that was a whole new avenue of customers that otherwise wouldn't have come in, and we saw a whole slew of zombie, vampire, darker, kind of horror-based comics start to come from that. Then with Saga, that hit a section of the pop culture that maybe didn't necessarily go for the Walking Dead side of things, but they also weren't coming in for Superman and Batman.
Yeah.
And that brought people in because they realized, well, there's this story that I know I can get on Amazon, but there's other stories like it. And then you start seeing, you name it, a lot of Brian K. Vaughan stuff was selling. That was when we had Image kind of had like that little resurgence where they had four or five titles that were going on. I think was it Dying and the Dead was one that was going on. That might not have been the title. Divine? Something Divine? That must have been it.
The Wicked and the Divine.
Wicked and Divine. There we go. You know, there's that whole little genre of kind of alt, I guess I would say, alt comics that were coming out that really drew in a new crowd of people. And unfortunately, when Saga went on break, a lot of those other comics ended, and those people have not come back.
Yeah. When you break the habit.
Yep.
And I think that may have been ultimately what led DC to saying, we need our books out.
100%. I mean, what went crazy during COVID? D&D, board gaming, Magic, The Gathering, and comics, because they were all things you could do at home, either individually or in a small group setting. We weren't going to concerts. We weren't going to movies. We weren't going on cruises. We weren't doing a lot of that stuff. So you had to have ways of entertaining. And when Diamond, being the only gig in town, says we're going to shut down, it's a big risk. And I think, actually, I was talking to Sam about it not that long ago, and he was saying, you know, you remember that Vince McMahon had the big contract for, I think it was with Fox, for WWE. And the contract said, you've got to run these shows. And if you don't run these shows, even during the pandemic, you're going to lose your contract. And so he moved things down to Florida and to his facility. And were the shows as big as they would have been if they were normal? No, not at all. But they met the contractual obligations to keep that contract going, to keep eyes. And it almost turned out to be better because you had more captive people that couldn't be going places and more eyes on a product.
Yeah.
And that was the opportunity that Diamond lost for publishers and retailers was you had a captive audience dying for something new, and you turned the spigot off.
I don't know that there was a good choice for Diamond to make at that point, and I think potentially if they had kept distributing comics, they would have kept DC, we'd be in a totally different boat now. The question is, how would that have impacted the retailer community? And we have seen a shakeup there where because of the pandemic, people were tight on money, couldn't get to the store, yada yada. Could there have been problems on that side of the equation that then rippled back to the publishers, the distributors, all that kind of a thing, and we'd be in a different world of hurt? I don't know.
I don't know, because think about it, when stores were closed and couldn't open, Diamond, Jeppy, they extended significant terms to allow people to not have to pay back their debt. So Diamond sat without their money longer, without being able to pay the people they owed money to longer. So,
but they also weren't accruing more debt at that point.
Well, they did send people back to work, and they weren't bringing new product in. There's a lot of questions. A lot of questions.
It may have worked out fine. It may not, if we don't know, and we will never know.
Yeah, I'll say this. I think the industry would probably have remained stagnated where it was. I don't know if we could say this is better or that is better. I think what we can definitively say is that things are different now than they were, and we have different risks and challenges now than we did before. We were going to have risks and challenges either way. They're just different today, and that can be uncomfortable for a lot of people because I knew my enemy before. Now I have new enemies I don't know yet, but I still think there's opportunity.
Well, I think one difference, if Diamond had kept distributing, kept DC, and we were still in the Diamond monopoly at this point, we would still have sales numbers.
We would have sales numbers, yep.
We would have more information on what's selling, have some ideas as to why. We would have more information to go on. We'd be able to quantify how much various publishers seem to be worth to Diamond, etc. Not that that's the full picture, totality of comic sales, all the usual caveats, etc. But I think that lack of information is what's adding a lot of unknowns into the current situation. And I don't think that helps it. And I find it hilarious every time I see an article about, you know, people befalling, you know, oh, we don't have comic sales. Wasn't it wonderful back when we did, compared to all the flack I got when I was doing the sales analysis. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, I mean, it was a beneficial tool to have because it could give us eyes on the industry. But the one thing that we've always missed and that we don't have are not necessarily just the new sales, but the back issue sales.
Yeah.
And I think if there were numbers around that, that would be painting very different pictures, especially for publishers, to think about what maybe they should be thinking about doing and changing.
Well, and think how helpful that information would have been to have had and being collected and stuff during the pandemic. Because it's like, okay, maybe this title didn't sell gangbusters originally, but you know, there's actually some solid activity on it in the back issue market.
When people are forced to have to find new ways to entertain themselves, they actually do like it.
Yeah, yeah.
No, we sold a ton of back issues during the pandemic. When new issues were ceasing to exist, we had people calling us all the time like, do you have any new comics? And we would say, well, we don't have new releases, but we can put together packs of comics, whether you want random stuff or specific title runs, you know, people coming in for trades, hardcovers. We did a steady business during the pandemic. There's no doubt about that. It was just a very different business than if we would have had new comics every week.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I definitely think we're going to see continued evolution of the situation in the coming weeks. And I certainly think as we get closer to that April 1st point, we may see things either moving faster or, again, a couple of publishers like potentially Dynamite and Titan staying very quiet until whatever happens with Diamond kind of happens. Either they come out of Chapter 11 okay and fine, or they don't, or I don't know if there's a third path there.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a third path, right? I think there's going to have to be something for the smaller publishers that's not going to lead to Lunar or PRH. It's just what path that is and what the expectation is going to be on retailers. And retailers will make decisions based on that, right? Whether they're going to extend to bring in certain products or not.
I think there's an opportunity, were they of a mind to, for a Japanese distributor to plant a flag in the U.S. for manga distribution and then get some of these other publishers going through there just as a side hustle kind of a deal. I don't think that'll happen, but I think it'd be very interesting if it did.
I think if it did, they would look at it and go, no wonder this stuff fails.
Yeah. Probably.
Just looking at the amount of content you get, the price point, different format, right? Black and white, usually. I just think that there's enough differences where I think someone coming into the market would be like, boy, this seems, there's so many things against this. It doesn't seem like it would work. But obviously it does, right? There's publishers that have existed for many, many years, ups and downs through in there, but many years, and made it work. I'm of the mind that I don't care if it's where the company comes from. I think what is needed is a shakeup in just how the distribution model works and where the products can get to, whether that's an Amazon-style fulfillment system. Another thing that honestly has limited our industry for many, many years is the lack of overprinting to account for interest in books. And I'm not saying every title all the time needs to print an extra 10,000 of everything, but great case in point, we're going to have One Nation Under Doom coming out. I guarantee you within 6 days, we're going to be hearing that we're going into a second print. Well, I'm sorry. It's the biggest title that's going to be coming out. You've got Doom that's going to feature in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
You're telling me you couldn't print an extra 30,000 copies of that and plan to sell it for even if it's the next 6 months? It makes no sense.
If they go to a second printing, it's because they didn't have enough faith in the first printing to overprint. Yeah.
Yeah. You see that time and time again. And that's not something that distribution solves. That's publishers.
That's publishers. And we've seen that pendulum swing back and forth from publishers saying, we are printing to order, period. Maybe we'll have enough to cover damages. Maybe we won't. To other times, publishers saying, we're going to experiment with overprinting and kind of oversaturating the market and see how that does. And it almost always seems to revert back to pretty much print to order.
Yep.
But I do think when you're doing a tentpole event like, you know, the Doom stuff, particularly now, given the
Batman Hush,
the profile of the character and stuff. Well, Batman Hush too, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like,
if you're not overprinting that, why not?
I mean, these are just obvious things where, why don't we have 25, 30,000 copies of this being printed extra? You know that they're going to sell.
Well, that's the thing, is they don't know they're going to sell, and they don't want to gamble on it.
Well, I can tell you it's going to sell.
I think you're right, but if they don't have the orders for it, the publisher doesn't want to take the risk. They're very risk averse. They've been putting that on the retailers, and I think what they're going to find right now is retailers are going to be very risk-averse for the next couple of months, as they should be.
Yeah, I mean, with no returnability, we bear the brunt of the burden. And so if we can't return a product, why would we over-order? And when you don't print enough to say, like, oh, we have faith in this product, you're going to want to come back for it. Now you stunt my ability to get it in. Now I have to wait for a second print that's going to take 3 to 4 weeks. I'm going to lose momentum. People are going to start to slow down after a certain while. And so it's kind of like you go in this vicious circle.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if you have any other key points to talk about. I do know you said that you had some other questions.
We got some questions. Why don't we go dive into that?
Let's do it. I'm in.
All right. From my James, not your James. He says, I know the guys at Cowabunga run a fiscally responsible model. Cash paid when goods arrive, not being in arrears. I know James and Eric know quite a few shop owners, know John worked in a shop. Is this normal in the industry? And do you think a large number of shops will face financial hardships or closures based on owing receipts to Diamond?
Not normal. But then again, the last 3 years, nothing's normal. And will stores end up, I think stores, what we talked about earlier, stores will close because they just don't want to deal with the headaches, and they've been around for long enough. People are ready for retirement. I think that's going to be the biggest driver for stores closing. There are some instances of stores that have stuck with Diamond that I think some of the switch over will be very challenging for them. In fact, one of the biggest companies in comics, Midtown Comics, what we understand is that they had stuck with Diamond specifically because for as many publishers as possible, they did not want Lunar, aka DCBS, to see their sales numbers. So when you're talking Image, that's one of the biggest publishers that Midtown sells. I mean, if you can go on the Midtown website and you will find that most new Image number ones, they've got signed copies or in-store signings or you name it. They didn't have Image Comics for 2 weeks because they had to start to shift over to Lunar. There were issues with Diamond. So there's a lot of comic stores that are in that kind of space. There's one very close to us locally who created a Lunar account specifically so he could get DC from them, and everything else he continues to get through Diamond. Could be a big problem. And I think you're going to see gaps. I think that's going to be the biggest challenge that stores face is in this shift over how they're going to handle it. Owing receipts to Diamond, like James pointed out, we purchase our product the second it gets off the truck in our store. So we don't owe anyone anything on it. Through Diamond, that's a COD, and through PRH and Lunar, that's as soon as the scan goes through that says the product's been delivered, they take the money from our account. But I would say stores that do have terms extended with Diamond, they will probably have some very pesky phone calls coming up saying, hey, make sure you make your payments. And that could force a couple of stores to go out. But I see that being more the minority than the majority.
Well, and I think any shop that's kind of teetering on the edge for whatever reason, any bump in the road could be a problem.
Yeah.
We just had that over the holidays with stuff not getting out on time through Diamond. There was the week or so where Lunar said, hey, we're not shipping Image to Diamond. We're going to fill it ourselves. I don't know how that all shaked out or whatever, but I think if shops shut down on this, it's going to be really for one of two reasons. One, they were on the financial edge anyways, and this was just more than they could financially bear, etc.
Yep.
Or again, more likely, like we've talked about, the store owner's been around the block a number of times on this, may have even gone through the original distributor wars, certainly went through the whole pandemic stuff, and they're like, you know, enough's enough.
Yep. Time to go fishing.
Can't say that I blame them on that.
No.
And it's funny, because I hear that phrased as, well, these are people set in their ways, and like, they don't want change. No, they don't want a huge headache.
I mean, there are some that are just don't want change, but there's also a lot that are just burnt out from 60-hour weeks, from missing family events. When you own a small business, there's a lot that goes into it. And yes, there's the, well, this is what you signed up for. But then there's also, if you have a staff of two or three people and someone has a family emergency, someone gets sick.
Yeah.
A child gets sick. God forbid your staff want to go on vacation, right? Like, there are a lot of things that equate to, well, I'm going to be working extra. And so I think there's a lot of people that say, whether it's been 25, 30, 40, I know one person who's saying it's 50 and I'm hanging them up. That's a lot of time. That's a lot of service to the industry, a lot of service to customers. And I understand I'm a customer too at times. When you don't get something when you expect, you get pretty frustrated because it's like, man, I trusted you to do one thing. But if you think about it in totality over the course of many decades, and many things outside of your control, product coming damaged, product being shorted, product not shipping when it's supposed to, product being canceled, and you have to answer the front line to every single one of those people every time. Most of them fairly reasonable and respectful, but even if it's just one a month that you have to deal with, that's a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
Multiply that over decades. Yeah. When the time is the time, I can understand it.
Yeah, this may just be the straw that breaks the camel's back for a couple of them, and I don't fault them for that.
Yep.
I mean, particularly having gone through the last couple of years where you had to open up an account with another distributor and then open up another account with another distributor, and if you had picked UCS versus Lunar, maybe open another account for another distributor, plus deal with the distributors, all the stuff. Yeah, it's insane.
And the fact that each one has a different way of doing orders, each one has a different way of handling damages and shortages, like, PRH, the best way to do it is through the phone. Diamond, they've got their website. Lunar, you can't call anyone if you wanted to. Pretty sure if you drove and knocked on the door, they wouldn't answer. They don't want to hear from you. They want it in an email. They want it all to be in a paper trail. Each one of them has their merits, but when every one of them is different, it's a headache. It is an absolute headache. And yeah, there's going to be a point where people just say it's not worth the headache.
Yeah, I can understand that. I hope it's not too many stores, but I think that's as much or more of a risk than a financial hardship because of Diamond closing. But it also depends, if Diamond were to close, how quickly can some of these other publishers get elsewhere? And that brings us to our next question from James. He says, I pre-order Omnibus from Titan, the Savage Sword of Conan Omnibus, hardcovers from Magnetic Press, and some comics from Dynamite. Haven't heard a peep from any of these publishers. Do you have any insight into books from these publishers seeing the light of day in comic shops or maybe the book market, Amazon, etc.?
Yeah, I think we hit on a couple of those publishers specifically. Right now, they have not told us anything. However, I think it's safe to say that those publishers will be in the industry. It's just a question of where. My assumption is that if anything were to happen, there's just going to be a slight pushback in some release dates, maybe 3 to 4 weeks, as they have to just shift how the coordination of the product goes, right? So a lot of the Magnetic Press product and Titan, that's more European driven, so probably printed overseas, most likely China, and then making its way in through ports. Well, when it gets to the port, it has to know where it's being delivered. And, you know, Olive Branch, is a lot different than whether it's being delivered to Fort Wayne, Indiana, or in whichever warehouse it's going to end up. I think it's somewhere in New York, the PRH. So I think it's Hempstead, New York. But there's a lot of logistics that have to be worked out. So I would say once things settle down, assuming that Diamond ceases to exist, what's going to have to happen then is we'll have probably 3 to 4 weeks. There might be some re-FOCing of items as paperwork gets done, and we'll see where things go.
Yeah, I think there's a definite potential of certainly April, possibly a little into May, seeing, like you said, some of the FOC and some of the stuff like we saw during the pandemic of these books aren't coming out now, but they're going to come here and the shifting and stuff as, again, if things have to move to a different distributor and stuff like that.
Yep.
So I would expect a little bit of chaos in April, even if Diamond sticks around. But again, we'll see if that happens. All right. From John Abel, 10% tariffs on products from China have started and may increase. 20% tariffs on products from Canada are currently on hold until March 3rd. These may not happen, may happen less than 25%, or may rise higher than 25%. Considering comics are a pre-order business with about a two-month lead time from order to printing to distribution to sale, how will publishers and stores come up with a reasonable sale price for their comics and books in such an unstable market?
Well, I will say this. Stores will have zero input. We will be the recipients of the retail price. And as such, the discount that applies to it, it will tell us exactly what we're paying. So this is a slippery slope, and I don't want to argue politics one way or another. What I will simply say is this. The bulk of the comic products that everyone reads is not printed in the United States. Much of it is printed in Canada, and a significant portion of it is printed in Asia. I personally don't care where things are printed as far as who does it, as long as the product is good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I can say is the city that I grew up in, I didn't grow up in the city, a city near the country that I grew up in had a very large printing operation that almost all through my childhood and well before my childhood printed some pretty popular magazines, Sports Illustrated, Time, Newsweek, not small titles. Shortly after I graduated from high school, which was in the early 2000s, the printing plant closed down and all of that industry moved, I think, presumably to Asia, which really was puzzling to me because there was a facility that had been maintained and operated that had all of the technology to do very complex printing. A lot of the things they were also printing musical magazines that had CD inserts and they were doing like the perfume tabs. So like there was a lot that went on in this printing factory. The buildings still exist, but those are not active in America anymore. And what this may end up spurring on is there are some boutique printing shops that are currently working with smaller publishers. And those smaller publishers are putting their books out in the $4.99 range, some in the $5.99 range. But I think what you're going to see is if these tariffs come into place, obviously the big companies, Marvel and DC, are going to have a lot harder time finding a printer to stand up and be able to handle their demand. But I think there's opportunities for the smaller publishers to find these small printing presses that are starting to pop up in America, and we may see those prices stick. We've definitely heard from certain publishers that if the tariffs go into place, specifically the Canadian tariffs, they'll probably have to look at raising their books from $3.99 to $5.99 if they're going to keep their printing in Canada. Again, I don't want to play politics. That's not what this is about. There are all of those implications that will have to play out. But at the end of the day, if tariffs come in and the printing remains where it is, prices will go up.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how the whole tariff thing plays out. The fact that this is happening at or around the same time as all the chaos with Diamond is not a good thing for the industry.
I think it adds a complication. But at the end of the day, I hate to say it, it comes down to numbers. It's a multiplier. That's just what it is, right? So if Diamond's going to pay X percent of cover price and they're going to charge X percent to manage the inventory, it doesn't matter if it's $2.99, $3.99, or $12.99. Percentage is the percentage. What it will affect, though, is I think the consumer sentiment and who wants to absorb that, if they want to absorb it or not.
I think it comes down, though, to the contracts in terms of who paid what when and who gets stuck holding the bag on the tariff. Because if you've bought stuff from a publisher at a given price and that was the agreement of the deal, I mean, even if it's through no fault of the publisher or whatever, if the tariff comes in and it's suddenly 25% more, I mean, are you legally bound to that order?
I think the way that I understand the market to work is if that were to happen and they were to, and a company were to say, the orders have been placed, we know what we need to print, but we're going to have to change the price from $3.99 to $5.99. My understanding is what would need to happen then is they would have to go through a re-FOC phase and allow people to adjust their orders down. Now, there's an absolute headache, but you know, if it's going to happen in mass with, you know, an entire Marvel print line, well, all right, then we're going to, I think we're going to take the time to do that, because that's usually in any given FOC, that could be 70 to 200 lines. So
if that ever does happen and you send out that FOC email, please put in very bold letters in the header, hey, this is important, or something to let me know I can't just ignore it.
I'm upping what I'm taking from you, FYI.
Yeah.
Right.
It adds an extra unknown and variable at a time where we've got enough going on in the industry as it is that we'll see what happens on that.
The good news for consumers is, if of all of this, all you really need to be concerned about is what's coming out and how much is it going to cost. I get to worry about where it's going to come from, how I'm going to handle it, how I'm going to make the order form work. Well, you get to help worry about that too a little bit. But regular customers who are just buying the books, all you got to worry about is, do I want to buy that and am I willing to pay that price?
But it is interesting that the tariff issue may be less of a problem for the smaller publisher.
Right.
Because again, they have more options here in the States and stuff to get their books printed, because usually it's going to be 5,000-10,000 copies.
Yep.
Versus DC or Marvel saying, okay, we've got X dozens of books. Some of them sell in the 100,000 thing. Some maybe in the 10,000-20,000 or whatever. But here's 2 million, 3 million, whatever units we need published this month.
Right.
A lot of small printers simply aren't going to be able to handle that.
They're going to laugh at it and go, yeah, we're not walking into that trap.
Yeah, we'd love to, but.
Right.
All right. From X-Men Patrick. Has any comic company reached out, Vault, IDW, Titan? As you may know, I love my Turtles and worry that IDW will fold. And has any of the Diamond-only companies reached out to say they want a wholesale direct or tried to sell back stock to you?
So there are some closed Facebook groups for retailers and publishers, and we are seeing any given day, we're getting updates on publishers and where they're moving from them and what their offers are and opportunities we talked about. Some of them are considering standing up direct to consumer and direct to retailer websites. It's a little bit all over. Specifically to IDW, there was a news report that there were some financial issues there. However, as we've kind of dug in further, it seems like business as usual on the IDW front.
Yeah.
There's just some restructuring going on in the overall organization. IDW is one of those companies that's been consumed a couple of times by other organizations, but they have plenty of cash flow. And so things should be continuing there just fine. And believe you me, they're not looking to get rid of Turtles anytime soon. So, and IDW is already distributed through PRH with a wholesale agreement through Diamond. So even the Diamond stuff does not affect where IDW comes from. So rest easy, Turtles inbound.
Now, it is worth pointing out that both Dark Horse and IDW have confirmed some layoffs. I think this is as much publishers tightening their belts and prepping for hard times in the coming months. And again, that bit with IDW, there was a report that came out that the auditor thought they were on shakier ground, and they're like, management's like, we disagree. You know, we've got this much money in the bank, and it was a couple of million or something.
Yeah, not peanuts. They've got operating funds.
Yeah, and they talked to the auditors, and they got the auditor to remove that concern.
Yep.
But I think there was a certain amount of damage done just from that going out and the headlines implying IDW was over or some such. And I think that was harsh.
Now, I do know one thing that is going to potentially impact IDW a little bit is that they lost the Artist Edition line to Skybound.
Yeah, I think that's going to be interesting because that was Scott Dunbar when he moved over. Yeah. All right, next question from X-Men Patrick. With so many companies jumping from Diamond now, Massive, Vault, Image, and others, is there a real way for Diamond to make it even if sold? Now, a few of these had already moved over.
Yeah, so some of them had moved over, and some were wholesaled, some were dual distribution. So there's different models going on there. But yeah, I think what we're going to end up seeing is, it's a tough one because it's a chicken egg thing, right? If Diamond ceases to exist, obviously there's no problem. If as they get closer to the deadline, I think we're going to see more companies starting to find out clauses and ways to move. I do think that if Diamond gets a purchaser, can continue to have operations and can assure and prove that they'll be able to make good on their debts, right? So paying the $9 million to PRH, the $4.4 million to Bandai, etc. If they can prove that they can pay that off, they will be able to continue to act as a wholesaler. And I think what we'll end up seeing is the companies, I should say the stores who opted to want to stick with Diamond for simplicity would rather stay there than leave. So I think if they can secure funding to continue, that they'll be fine. They will be able to wholesale everything but DC still.
Well, and I think it's going to be interesting because I at least have no idea how much of their business are things like the Funko Pop and all the merchandise and manga and stuff and kind of the back half of previews and whatnot. So I think they are reliant, obviously, on the comic side. They are a comic distributor. But if they've been able to downsize since the pandemic and can operate more leanly, then they can absorb more publishers going elsewhere. But when I see that thing saying, hey, if we don't have a buyer by April 1st, we'll have to shut down and lay off 168 employees, it does make me wonder how lean of an operation they are.
Yeah.
And I certainly don't want to see any of the people over there lose their job. They've had some super long-term employees, the guys who put together previews each and every month, do a great job with that, and I don't want to have to see them move on, yeah.
I'm just going to say one name. Nance Romer is far and away one of the greatest assets that the comic industry has. She is incredibly well-known within the industry as the go-to person at Diamond. If you've got a problem, Nance will solve it for you. Those are the kind of people that you can't replace. I can also tell you that there's a couple of employees that are in higher positions that I happen to be acquainted with on Facebook. And man, for a company that's going through some financial restructuring, they have a lot of time to post on Facebook about anything and everything.
That's not a good look.
That's kind of what I thought. But hey, it's not my job.
Yeah. All right. Next question. How do you diversify to stay alive? Hasbro and Mattel have large buy-ins before they wholesale to stores. Do you see that as an option for other collectibles like toys? Where can you buy Pokemon without giving away trade secrets now that Pokemon is pulling away from Alliance and asking for product back over 500,000, you read?
Yeah. Pokemon specifically, Pokemon is not solely distributed by Alliance. We have other distributors that we work with that sell Pokemon. The way that Pokemon does work, though, is you kind of have your master store that you get your dominant allocation from for things like pre-releases and events. So the good news of Pokemon is that they are available through many other distributors, and we have three other distributors that sell Pokemon besides just Alliance that we work with. So we're okay there. As far as other things like figures, so Marvel Select being one of the areas that we do get a decent amount of figures, especially MCU figures, but they're part of the Chapter 11 filing. That may negate itself as a concern for us. Funko Pops, obviously being distributed by Diamond, that's going to be interesting to see where they end up in all of this. I think the bigger things, like you'd said, the Bandai and the Hasbro, the good news is, again, while Diamond is our current main avenue for those companies are big enough that they're not going to want to give up sales to us. So whether it's going through Universal or some other distribution option, we won't have to worry about placing ridiculously high unsustainable orders in order to have an account. There are some suppliers of those types of pop culture entertainment items like NECA, where they don't require nearly as high of a threshold to have an account. So we have opportunities through that. But yeah, it's really just working through additional distributors, which, yeah, it adds a little bit extra. But I will say that through all of this, it has made us look at our distributor network that we use. And we found a couple of opportunities that we maybe didn't know were out there. I will say one of the best things that has happened to us is Marvel going to PRH, forcing us to, well, not forcing, but giving us the opportunity to open a PRH account has really opened us up to a breadth of other products that we wouldn't have otherwise necessarily had access to or access in the quantity that we did. So, you know, I think that this will breed other opportunities, and the main products that you listed out, we will be able to continue to receive.
I'm going to use this as an opportunity to encourage you to pursue avenues for Bandai, Bandai Namco, and stuff like that, to see what other toys and whatnot you can get from them, because I know there's another place I deal with that gets a stupid amount of my money, because they got the Super Sentai Morphers and all those toys. So I'm just saying, if you were to expand into that area, there's a market there.
Yeah, there is. We have looked at other opportunities for the figures, the toys, that kind of stuff. There are certain thresholds where it becomes a much bigger investment, and there's a lot, I'll just say there's more risk to it.
Yeah.
And that shows itself in different ways. So it's something we've thought about, it's something we're looking at, but our core business is comics, always has been comics. Well over 50% of our sales are back issues, new comics, and trades. You know, I think this last year it was 68% of our sales were specific to that. And then the other 32% were comprised of Magic, Pokemon, Warhammer, D&D, retro video games, as well as board games, action figures, toys, statues. So we carry a lot of lines, but we are a comic store first and foremost. And so that's where we're going to continue to make sure that we push ourselves to provide the best that we can.
Absolutely. And I think that's a smart move, because there's a fine line between diversification and splintering.
Yep.
As much as I would love for you to get the Super Sentai toys, I want you to focus on your core business and stay good at that.
Yep.
Because Lord knows, selling the comic books is challenging enough.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, is you can chase rabbit holes all day long to try and find new options and opportunities, but exactly what you said, you've got to know your core, you've got to put the bulk of your effort to your core, and as other opportunities present themselves, you just have to look at it and say, okay, not only what's the financial buy-in, but what's the overhead buy-in that we have to account for as well. Now, one thing that we do that takes overhead compared to a lot of other places is we emphasize and specialize in back issues. And that takes overhead, because you have to know the product. And if you don't know the product, you have to research the product. Then you have to manage the product, whether it's in the back room, under the tables, on the tables, right? You have to be constantly aware of what's going on. So there is overhead there, but that's where we get the bulk of our, I guess, juice and our destination status. So for us, that is energy that we need to spend in order to keep our competitive advantage.
Yeah, again, the domain knowledge of spinning out into other areas and stuff. If you don't understand the product, you can't stock it properly. It's a losing battle.
Yep.
And then X-Men Patrick did see the article where the auditors removed the ongoing concern opinion on IDW. And he wants to know, does this mean he'll still have another year of Turtles?
I think he'll have many more years of Turtles.
Turtles is not going anywhere. Whether it stays as a comic or not, more of a question. But even that, I think, not a risk.
Probably the risk of being at IDW at this point is fairly well mitigated. But even if things were to end with IDW, I guarantee you somebody else will be lining up to have that license.
Oh, yeah. That's a license that's going to stick around for a while. And again, IDW is already safely ensconced at Penguin Random House, so I don't think there's any major concern there. And I think, again, what caused the auditor's concern was there was the risk of that $9 million that is owed to Penguin Random House. Apparently, there was some question about the contract between Penguin Random House and IDW, if they could kind of pass the loss on to IDW.
Yep.
Which, when I heard that, my first thought is, this is where it pays to go over your contracts, folks.
Yeah, right? Maybe that extra attorney is worth the money for that contract review.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, that would be the kind of thing that whatever you would have saved would be the difference of do you stay in business or not.
Right.
All right. From Brawlinator. He says, I suspect the tariffs and disruptions are going to be used as a reason for another comic book price increase, which will not improve the industry in any meaningful way, in his opinion. That said, he thinks the biggest question is how will smaller publishers who do not have their own catalog be able to best solicit their books to comic book readers and comic book shops? And that, I think, really goes to the question of if something happens to Diamond, or frankly, if two or three key people at Diamond were to leave or not be there, and Preview ceases to be, how do these smaller publishers get the word out on their books?
So that is a fundamental difference that I see between Lunar and PRH. PRH has the Marvel, the IDW, and the PRH panels Preview catalogs. And the panels is more of like the PRH house brand items, the things, the licenses that they own. So I'm guessing Boom might end up in there. because those are the companies or the smaller publishing houses that they've purchased exclusively to be through PRH. Those exist. Now, you have an Image Digital catalog, you have the DC Connect, you've got, I think, one other catalog through Lunar, and then there's also Next Phase. And Next Phase is essentially Lunar's version of Previews.
Yeah.
So if you're a small publisher, that's one thing to take into account, is who is going to market your product for you. It's not a print catalog, it's PDF only, but there is a catalog for Lunar called Next Phase that I offer every month. I have the PDF link in the email, but that is where I would say the best avenue for that solicitation is. Other ways that small publishers can market their materials is really focused on social media. I think that's going to be the best way in absence of a print catalog. The other options, of course, are sending collateral to stores to promote your product, which does cost money. We will frequently get PDF copies, advanced copies of comics emailed to us as a means to help market things. But I will say the over-proliferation of that will be coming soon will make it almost unscalable for us to read everything and be able to comprehensively speak to it. So I think the social media side of things, I think having any marketing materials available, those are the pieces that are going to need to be in place if someone doesn't have that Previews catalog, the Next Phase catalog, whatever it's going to be.
Yeah, I think we're in a very weird state right now where we've got about 1,000 pages of catalog every month coming out. Now, that's double counting Image and DC since they get reprinted in the Next Phase over at Lunar. But that's a stupid amount of catalog pages. I always thought the 600 or whatever at Diamond was plenty. But it's getting to where I go through the DC, the Marvel, the Image, the IDW, that kind of stuff, and then I go into the Diamond Previews, the Next Phase or whatever, and it gets annoying when I get to those and it's like, oh, I've got to go jump forward, you know, 50 pages to get past the Image because I've already read that or something like that.
Yep.
Or I've got, wait, is this the first time or the third time I'm seeing Mad Cave or IDW or some of these others? I really think, I mean, Previews has always had its issues. It's not perfect, whatever, but it was nice when it was one-stop shopping.
100% agreed.
Okay, Brawlinator continues. The Previews catalog has been his go-to on discovering new books and trying out different publishers. Of course, Marvel, DC, and Image have had their own catalogs, so has IDW. As far as he knows, there are no other catalogs, and most small publishers won't have means to publish or distribute one. Margins are already thin. Again, this goes to there are some other catalogs out there. One of the reasons for letting Diamond take such a large percentage of the gross on books was their infrastructure in both distributing and monthly soliciting. I'm not sure that 90% of the small publishers will be able to even get into shops if and when the catalog and Diamond distribution model dies. So do either Lunar or PHF even send pre-order catalogs out to comic shops? And he'd love to hear of any potential alternatives for the smaller publishers to stay afloat that we can think of. Now, to send the pre-order catalog out to shops, again, a lot of these things are digital only, I think. Because Next Phase isn't a print thing, is it? I forget off the top of my head.
It's digital only, yep.
Yeah. So, and that may be another thing that even if Diamond continues, they may decide to potentially move Previews to digital only just as a cost savings on the printing.
They could, but they get paid for Previews, so that's not a free product. The only two that are free are IDW and Marvel. Everybody else we got to pay for, so they get their monies. You know, I think that we talked about Next Phase, we talked about social media. This is where the market is primed for disruption.
Yeah.
You know, you think about what is one of the main sources of information as a first-stop shop on the internet today? Wikipedia. It's generated content by users that are putting information in, probably AI quite a bit now too. So there's no guarantee that it's 100% perfect, but someone had to create the platform, right? Someone had to create this mechanism where people could add information. Is this an opportunity for someone to create a digital platform for solicitations for comic books, regardless of who they're coming from, right? If it's going direct to consumer, direct to retailer, if it's on Kickstarter, if it's wherever, digital print does not cost that much. And so these are the opportunities that someone somewhere could find a business model and or create an open source model that really is good for all. That's one idea. And I think that there's going to be a number of other ideas that will get floated, and which one wins will really be which one resonates with people the most. So I think it's going to be down to markets changing. This is a time for disruption and opportunity.
Well, and I think one of the other changes that's in the works that could facilitate that kind of one-stop shopping website of here's what's being solicited is that Comet standard for solicitations. And this is a file format that I think Comics Pro is the main mover and shaker behind it, is trying to get the distributors to adopt over the course of 2025. So the data comes out in a standardized format versus, okay, here's what Diamond has it as, different format for Lunar, different format for PHR. There was yet another one for UCS when it existed and such. So getting it to where there's a standard input file format would certainly make things a little easier on some of those respects.
Yeah, for sure.
But there's always been enough pushback of comics being a pre-order market to begin with that some people don't want to deal with the catalogs at all.
Yep.
And now add to the fact there's so damn many of them, it's a little crazy. I think right now the catalogs are the most broken part of comic book sales, period. Between Marvel's order form and catalog being out of sync with each other every month for ages, to certain publishers, it's like, yeah, you know, I'm thinking about this, but I'd really like to see what's inside. And I flip the page, boom, it's another property, another book, whatever. I get to one where, for me, admittedly, it was an easy decision to say, yeah, I'm not interested. And then I scroll through 6 to 8 digital pages of inside stuff, and it's like, yeah, I really didn't need to see this. It certainly didn't encourage me to buy it. Now, that's, again, my bias is whatever. But if there was some way that we could get a concise listing of stuff and be able to drill into, yeah, I do want to see more on this.
Yeah.
That would be handy. I just think the way the catalogs are done, the redundancy, the number of them, the having to flip through potentially, again, about 1,000 pages, it just doesn't work these days. And I think that needs to be fixed, but how Penguin Random House decides to fix it, how Lunar decides to fix it, if Diamond sticks around, how they decide to fix it, if they decide to try to fix it, are going to be going in different directions.
Yep.
So I definitely think it's going to be a challenging time for the coming months for smaller publishers, both in terms of shoring up, solidifying, and guaranteeing distribution, but also the challenge they've always had of getting the word out about their books. And it's funny because the whole, hey, is there any other way that they can promote their books? For the last 207 months now, I've been doing a preview spotlight, and Brawlinator is really good about promoting the stuff he's involved with. I think that's awesome. I appreciate him doing that. There have been a few other people. Darren was really good about it with the Sit Comics stuff. There were one or two others that had a miniseries out once in a while they'd always promote. But I'm always amazed how few publishers, creators, marketing people aren't taking advantage of a platform that I'm putting out there for free of, hey, this is targeting the exact audience you want of people who are looking for things to buy, and your stuff's going to be there. If you just point it out to them, maybe they'll buy it, and they don't. Avenues are out there. You just got to take advantage of them.
That's the thing, yes. I think there's that piece of it. And like I said, I still think there's opportunity for disruption. And for creative people who have ideas and want to try something, this is your chance.
Well, there's opportunities, but there's also a very big need for disruption.
Yep. And maybe not the disruption we're feeling right now.
Positive disruption.
Yeah.
There's room for improvement on this because there are a lot of good books in the back reaches of the various catalogs and such that because of catalog fatigue or whatever, people would be buying if they knew it was something they would like. And I'm sorry, in some of these cases, a postage stamp size cover and a 3-sentence blurb isn't sufficient.
Nope.
Particularly when some of them are written in the most generic of blurbiness, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
Here's the high concept. It's written by so-and-so. You've never seen anything like it before.
Except the 7 other things that are in your mind right now that it sounds a lot like.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been saying for years that the art of comic book promotion has been lost.
Yep. You know, I think back to Rebirth. It had nothing to do with the content inside the book, but at the time, Stuart Schreck was working for DC, and all he did was took a 6 or 7 second video of the lenticular cover of the first issue, just waving it back and forth, and the amount of orders that generated was just completely insane.
Yeah.
And that wasn't even on the content inside. That was 7 seconds of a cover, a lenticular cover that he waved. That was $7.99, $8.99. I can't remember what it was. It was not $3.99. I know that.
But if it's cool.
Exactly. And when you look at a lenticular cover as a picture in a previous catalog, it doesn't have the same effect.
But this is where a digital version could absolutely do an animated GIF of it.
Yep, that can happen. I think also, if it was a web-based, not a PDF, but an actual website-based sort of catalog, you can incorporate other components into it, right? So maybe you click on the image and you get to see the first or the first two pages of the book.
Yeah.
Right. Now you're kind of embedding things. Maybe the creators want to leave a little 30 or 60 second audio blurb. We'll hit the play button next to that title and let them tell you what their solicit is.
Or have links to the interviews they've done on the book.
Exactly. So again, these are disruptive or I guess emerging models. Someone just needs to create the parent website that hosts it. And you give that to people, and it's going to be up to the actual publishers and the creators to leverage it. But I guarantee you, if the platform is there and people know to go to it, people that leverage it will have higher sales.
But that's kind of the crux of the issue. For it to work, it has to already be working almost. Because otherwise, people aren't going to submit the content. If there's not the content, people aren't going to go to it. If people aren't going to it, then people aren't going to submit the content. You know, fortune favors the successful, I guess, is what I'm saying on this. How do you jumpstart that kind of a thing? And I'm not saying it can't be done. There's a billion examples on the web where these sorts of things have exactly been done. Wikipedia is a great example of that. It had to start from nothing to begin with. But I don't see a financial business model for somebody to put together such a website. And even if they did, would people use it or not? It's absolutely needed and I think could be a game changer on sales for certain things. But I just don't know how it comes into being.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be something where it has to be that Uber model, right, where it's expandable. So maybe it's something that already exists that didn't even start with comics. We just have to make a comic adaptation. But I can assure you, when Uber started, they didn't have a fleet of cars that they were working with, but it was the promise that if you needed a car, we could find someone that had one to take you somewhere. And yeah, I think that's what we're looking at here is we're looking for the platform that says, we've got the car to get you there.
Or if you can just get enough of the smaller publishers on board to begin with to send the data, that gives you a threshold amount of content.
Yep.
And then you'll get the people who are looking for that kind of a content. That gets you a threshold amount of users, and you can build from there.
All right. Whoever is ingenious and likes to do some web coding listening to the podcast, we've laid out some ideas for you.
Yeah. And if you're interested in doing that kind of web development, please talk to me. I happen to have a website, you know. Just saying. Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how all of this develops, if Diamond comes out of Chapter 11 or not. And I'm hoping they do, but even if they do, that may just be buying time. I think they've got to readjust their business model based on having lost a number of the publishers.
Yeah.
But if they go away, that's a huge void the industry needs to fill.
Yeah, I hate to see people lose their jobs. I mean, that's at the end of the day, that's probably the biggest hurdle, right, is the individuals that are affected.
Absolutely.
I guess I have nothing personally against any person at Diamond. I certainly don't have anything. I have frustrations with the organization just due to some of the things that they've not bothered to care about in the industry. But that doesn't mean that I dislike them as people or as a company. I think that the industry has relied on Diamond just as much as Diamond has relied on the industry over the last 30 years, for good and for bad. But all things must come to an end. You know, we don't go to Blockbuster anymore, right?
Well, and Diamond's been around 43 years. They've had a good run.
They've had a good run. They've tried to bring in other leadership, and that failed, reverted back to Jeppy. It may just be time. The model may be done the way that it was, and it's time to move to a new model, and that's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
No industry should be so dependent on one company that it could fail. I think COVID was a good wake-up call to that.
Well, I mean, while there were advantages to the Diamond monopoly, it was a de facto monopoly and therefore made it a single point of failure.
Yep.
It wasn't an issue until the pandemic.
Yep.
I'm not saying they made a wrong choice there. I don't think there was a right choice to be made, but they made the decision they made, and this is the long-term consequences of that. And I think kind of to close this out, what I would encourage people to do is when you see articles, read them, don't just look at the headlines. Try to understand what it's actually saying. Don't go jumping to conclusions. Again, there was a concern about, was IDW ongoing, and people were thinking it's already closed. There was the talk about Diamond may have to close down on April 1st, so we're never getting another previews again kind of a thing. That's jumping to conclusions. There's been a time or two on the Slack channel I've already had to say, hey, wait a sec, guys, you know, let's take a step back here. And it's not to say everything's going to come out all roses and sunshine, but let's hope for that. And let's also be very cognizant that there are people at these companies. I've been watching a lot of YouTube videos, reading some articles and stuff, and the amount of vitriol I've seen aimed at Diamond, at other particular individuals, is shocking, and in my opinion, not only unprofessional, it's blatantly unkind. And particularly all the folks at Diamond, and I know some of these people, I have been close friends with some people who have worked at Diamond in the past and such. Take my word for it, they are people.
Yes.
They have feelings. This has to be a stressful time for them. Let us be cognizant of that. Let us be respectful of that. Let us try to be helpful to them on that. Whether the company survives or not, and I kind of hope it does, but if it doesn't, I'll live. I want to make sure all of these people that are currently there have gainful employment, have sanity through this process, and are treated with kindness and the respect that they deserve just as people.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Because again, the jumping to conclusions and the vitriol I've seen on some of the YouTube stuff I've watched shocked me. And there were a couple of people that it's like, wow, I didn't expect that out of them sort of thing.
Yeah, I think part of that is just kind of the keyboard hero, the social media aspect of things where the people aren't sitting across from them. And to what you're saying, many of these people, I have either been on the other line of the phone talking to them. I have been talking with them in person, whether it's at an event, a convention, you know, through other industry events. At the end of the day, people are people, and you can't pin any one business decision on a person, right? The organization made the choice. Those choices have consequences, positive and negative, but the individuals themselves are still individuals. I do think that there are pros and cons to every distributor that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of those things that it's an old saying, right? Better the devil you know.
Yeah.
At times, right? So in this case, we quote unquote know the devil. We know how to operate with them. We know how to work within their constraints. We know what their systems do and don't do. What we don't know is what could happen outside of it. Now, that's an opportunity, but it's also a risk. And I don't think anyone is rooting for the industry to fail, but I think we're all rooting for the industry to stabilize.
Definitely to stabilize. And in the path from here to there, decisions will be made. Some of them will be good ones. Some of them may seem like good ones at the time and turn out to be bad ones. Some of them may just blatantly be bad ones, but get made anyways through whatever reason.
Yep.
Let's all hope for the best. Let's all take things in the understanding that everyone is intending to do the best they can.
Yep.
They're certainly looking out for their best interests. This goes back to that whole prisoner's dilemma thing. What's best for each of the individuals is going to be what influences their decision, and that may not be best for the overall big picture, but if you've got people acting on the assumption that everybody else is going to act kind of altruistically and for the bigger picture, and they don't, well, that just punishes the good people, and that kind of sucks.
Yeah, and this is a rapidly evolving situation. Like we've said, we could be recording this tonight. By the time we wake up tomorrow, something seismic could have happened. We have no way of knowing. So we're just almost, in a sense, along for the ride. Now, as retailers, yeah, we're taking some proactive approaches to things. We're kind of taking measured steps to make sure that we don't get caught in a lurch, confused, concerned, right? We're being preventative. But as industry, folks who have an interest in the industry, as consumers of the industry, the best thing we can do is watch along and listen and observe. And I think, John, that kind of leads to the idea of maybe in, I don't know, 6 to 8 weeks, as we hit that April 1st deadline and maybe get just a little past it, we should probably get together again and just see where we're at. And obviously, if big things happen between now and then, we can certainly try and get together and put a recording out there with any new major events. But otherwise, I think we're just all going to be in a little bit of a holding pattern to see how things evolve, see where Diamond goes with Chapter 11, see how the April deadline looks. And if there are going to be closures and layoffs, where are some of these publishers that we talked about, the Titans, the Dynamites, Magnetic Press, where are they going to end up?
Yeah, I definitely think that first week of April, by then we'll know if Diamond had found buyers for parts of it, all of it, none of it, whatever. Is there a transition plan? What is the plan, etc.? Have other publishers made decisions? Like you said, there's going to be a lot more information at that point. That seems like the next inflection point along this journey. And definitely, I think we should circle back at that point. So if people have questions for that episode, message me directly on Slack. That's probably the best way to do it. If you just put it in the general channel, there's a chance I miss it, don't capture it, and it scrolls off and is lost. But I definitely appreciate all the questions we got this time. And it's, again, it, as we've said a number of times, is an evolving situation. We're recording this late on February 7th. It'll go up probably the 17th. And during that intervening week, I am sure some of this is going to feel really dated of why are they talking about this? Didn't they know about?
No, we didn't.
Yeah. If it happened after the 7th, we absolutely did not. My clairvoyancy has not kicked in yet.
We're working on it.
So, anything else?
Nope. I think we're good.
Cool.
Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The deadline is typically the second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. Check the main page of the website for more information and the exact deadline for the next preview spotlight.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you liked this episode, please spread the word about the Comic Book Page podcast by telling your friends and posting a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And please, join our Slack community and let us know what you thought of this episode. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. So let's talk about comics. The show notes, forum, and instructions for how to join our Slack channel can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. The opinions of the co-hosts and guests are their own. The Comic Book Page podcast is copyright John Mayo. And thanks again for listening.